Nightlife with Suzanne Hill on ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app. This Musical Life with Jeff Apter.
Tonight's This Musical Life is dedicated to one of the biggest bands of the late 60s and early 70s, Creedence Clearwater Revival. To take you back there, music journalist Jeff Apter is here tonight. Jeff's the author of numerous books on musicians, including Neil Finn, Keith Urban. His most recent book is last year's Lee Gordon Presents. Although, Jeff, you've got a new one in the works, don't you?
I do. August, the first week of August, a book called Reckless, The Saga of Australian Crawl. I'm expecting a soap opera soon after. it's got soap opera potential, Suzanne, let me tell you.
All right, we'll have to get you on for a conversation about Australian Crawl when that comes
out.
But to Creedence Clearwater Revival, you reckon that in a lot of ways they were a band out of time.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they emerged in a period in America in the late 60s. We're talking, you know, Paisley, Flower Power, Monterey Pop, Woodstock, all those great festivals. And, you know, there was the smell of patchouli in the air. And I think people were smoking a lot more than tobacco at the time. Your herbal cigarettes were very popular. It was just that kind of time. But Creedence were sort of rock and roll purists, if you like. It was like they came out of the 50s, to be honest. And not just the music they played, but the way they looked as well. You know, they had these sort of harsh short haircuts, and they dressed in denim and check shirts, and they just didn't look like they were of that generation. I think someone at Rolling Stone said there was nothing remotely psychedelic about them, which is really true, because a lot of their influences were from the first generation of rock and roll, the 1950s, you know, when your first wave of rockers like Elvis and Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, and all these guys were coming through, and they were drawing a lot on that. John Fogerty's really interesting. He was the lead singer, guitarist, producer, songwriter, pretty much the nuts and bolts of the band. He was born and raised in very working class California, but he sort of mythologized the American South and American past, much like Robbie Robertson from the band did as well. So it was he was drawing on his imagination rather than real life experience for a lot of his content for his songs, but they were incredibly evocative and just great, great songs. The type of music that I still think in many, many garages all around the world is a bunch of teenagers banging out a Creedence song. You know, it's one of the first few songs you would learn when you're a garage band. And I think that says a lot about their sort of timelessness.
Mm. I mean, so successful. 14 US top tens and a huge number of hit albums as well.
Yeah, they weren't around for long. I mean, really, they were only around for about 5 years. But in that time, somehow, I guess you see it in the Beatles too. You know, they recorded 7 hit albums between 1968 and 1972. You know, number of hit singles. And they were on the road when they weren't doing all this. So it was just this frenetic period of activity. And, you know, I was talking about legacy and just the fact that their music is perennial. The Greatest Hits Chronicle, it's called, the 20 Greatest Hits, which was released in 1976. It's still in the Billboard 200 chart. Yeah, that's right. And it's done a handy 12 million copies. So did okay. And they were more of a singles band than an album band. And that made them set them apart too, because it was the time when people, you know, the Beatles were doing Sgt. Pepper's and everybody was making concept records. Creedence gave it a shot, but really they're much better known for the short, sharp 3-4 minute pop rock single, a number of which we're going to present tonight.
Mm-hmm. But things fell apart pretty acrimoniously, didn't they, in 1972?
It got really messy, yeah. I mean, having read John Fogerty's biography and read quite a bit about the band and seen some documentaries and things, they were sort of a classic case study in how not to get along as a band. They fell apart in 1972. The acrimony was just dreadful. And keep in mind, too, that John Fogerty's brother, Tom, was in the band. There were lawsuits about business, artistic control. And John, when he left the band in 72, refused to ever play with them again. And even 20 years later, when they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he refused to play with his bandmates. He performed 3 songs instead with a bunch of other fans of the band, people like Bruce Springsteen and Robbie Robertson. And Tom Fogerty, his brother, died in 1990, relatively young. And John said this in his eulogy: "We wanted to grow up and be musicians. I guess we achieved half of that becoming rock and roll stars. We didn't necessarily grow up. It's like, wow. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of backstory to it. It's, well, if someone's interested in, like I say, how not to run a rock and roll band, I think Creedence Clearwater Revival is a classic example of that.
Now, Jeff, where are we going to start musically tonight?
Start at the very beginning.
What have we got?
Before they became Creedence, they used to play covers. They were known as the Blue Velvets and a tad unfortunately the Gollywogs, a name that probably was okay in the mid-60s but doesn't really wash now. And John Fogerty was serving time in the US Army Reserve. But by 1968, they were now known as Creedence Clearwater Revival, playing in and around San Francisco. And the first breakthrough song they recorded, they sort of continue playing some covers as well as original songs now. And one of the best was a swampy version of Screamin' Jay Hawkins' 1956 rocker, I Put a Spell on You. They also covered people like Roy Orbison, who we've spoken about before, and other songs. But I think I Put a Spell on You really sort of captures the Creedence sound.
Greetings, Clearwater Revival. I Put a Spell on You. Jeff Apter is here in an installment of This Musical Life. We're talking about the story of Creedence Clearwater Revival. I mean, that one was a cover, Jeff, but the next track you're going to play, Proud Mary, that became an incredibly covered song.
That's right, a very covered song, yeah. It's just one of those signature songs that everybody would recognise. And like I say, every corner band, every covers band you'll hear down the local pub would probably play a version of Proud Mary. However, there have been more high-profile covers of the Creedence original. They include Status Quo, Prince, Neil Sedaka, Brian Wilson, and the one I haven't heard, Suzanne, is Leonard Nimoy doing Proud Mary.
Okay.
Spock from Star Trek.
Ooh.
I think, well, maybe we'll just do a whole segment on you know, the musical magic of Leonard Nimoy. So we're not going to play that one. We're going to play the original. This came out January 1969.
But you have to mention, like I said, I Can Tina.
Of course, I Can Tina did probably the best known cover of it, absolutely, and Tina used to kill it live. It was just a showstopper. So, yeah, it was just one of those songs that just had legs. Not unlike Tina, I guess. Sorry, that was a wrong joke. But it was just one of those songs that just sort of was very adaptable. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Leonard Nimoy's version is quite different from Status Quo's. But Creedence wrote the original and the best. And like I say, it was one of their first original hits.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, Proud Mary. Jeff Apter's here with an installment of This Musical Life on this Saturday night on Nightlife. You're with me, Suzanne Hill. Now, Jeff, next up we've got Bad Moon Rising. Just what was this Bad Moon?
Well, you know, I said before that they were a band out of time, but they were also, connected to the late 60s. America was in Vietnam. There was a lot of student protests, you know, and a lot of civil rights issues going on. John Fogerty sort of would often downplay, you know, the lyrical content of his song, saying it wasn't political, but sometimes you got to wonder. He said this song, which was yet another huge hit for him, was still in 1969. It was a number two hit in the States, number one in the UK, and probably number one here because Creedence had lots and lots of hits in Australia. Some critics figured that his lyric, it's a quite an ominous lyric, you know, Bad Moon Rising, was about Vietnam. But he insisted that it was inspired by a 1941 horror film called The Devil and Daniel Webster. I think I'll leave it to the listeners to make up their own mind. I see the bad moon rising.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, Bad Moon Rising. Jeff Abdur is here. Now, if that wasn't political, Jeff, if it was indeed about the devil and Daniel Webster from 1941.
Or bad weather. Could be just about the weather.
You like to write. The weather forecast. Yeah. This next one, Fortunate Son, most definitely a political lyric.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And John didn't deny that. It had a sort of second life, this song, particularly around the time of George W. Bush. You know, there was so much talk about him being, you know, his father being head of the CIA and president and so on. I remember reading a book called Fortunate Son, which was about George W. Bush. So the song had a sort, again, a sort of second life. When he was asked about the lyric, John Fogerty said, and he's good with the aphorisms, John. He said, it's the old saying about rich men making war and poor men having to fight them. And as I read that, I keep thinking about what I saw, you know, in yesterday's paper and today's paper. So some things don't change, do they? You know, the rich men make their decisions and, you know, it's everybody else who has to carry them out. I just want to say one thing. As I listen to these songs, they sound very much, don't they sound really fresh? Like they've just recorded them in for, you know, one or two takes. They don't sound laboured over.
No,
they sound really right. Fresh and like they're literally in someone's garage playing them. You know, which I guess you know speaks to their timelessness. They don't necessarily sound like they're from a time and place, apart from you know, maybe John Fogerty's garage. You know, but they've they just got certain. I don't know. They're unmistakable. I guess is the best way of saying it sonically.
Yeah. Here is Fortunate Son. Credence Clearwater Revival, Fortunate Son. Honestly, Jeff, just going through the list, I mean, I was born after these guys broke up, and yet I know all the songs. They've had such longevity, haven't they?
I've got this theory that, and I'm certainly drawing on my own experience as a teenager, everybody would have a copy of a cassette or an 8-track in their car. I seem to recall there was always a Roy Orbison's Greatest Hits and a copy of Credence Gold or one of the Credence collections. It seemed to me, this is growing up in Sydney suburbia in the 70s, of course, it seemed like they were everywhere. You know, the trade in Credence cassettes and 8-tracks must have been pretty lively. So, yeah, their music just seemed to be everywhere. And it's still all over, you know, rock radio and, you know, do jukeboxes still exist? If they did, jukeboxes would still be loaded with Credence songs, yeah. And I think there'll be stuff that, you know, not unlike the Beatles, that will have, you know, 50 years' time, people will still be talking about, oh, remember rock and roll? There was the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, there was this band called Credence, you know. So I really think they've got that sort of longevity, even though the songs are really simple, you know, just sort of whipped together pretty quickly. And, you know, talking about quickly, I mean, the next song we're going to play, we're still in 1969. We've played, what, 4 tracks going into the fifth, and it's still only a few months between them. The recording sessions that they must have conducted were amazing. Like I said, in between touring, promotion, fighting with each other.
Yeah, right, the songs must have come so easily.
Yeah. Mm. It's just, but some musicians, and I certainly get this, notice this in my work as a biographer, some people, and not just musicians, but filmmakers and all artists and so on, they hit a purple patch. They really do. And it's just this inspired period where they produce the bulk of their life's work. And it certainly happened for John Fogerty within, like I say, 3 or 4 years. It's an incredible purple patch of songs. We're going to play Down on the Corner. This came off the record Willie and the Poor Boys. I like it. He sings about a sort of mythical old-timey jug band called Willie and the Poor Boys who play on the street corners for change. And I thought it was an interesting response in some ways to the Beatles who did Sgt. Pepper's, which was a much more, I guess, psychedelic kind of thing. You know, John Fogerty's answer to that was a bunch of guys on the corner playing for, you know, quarters. It was not quite as glamorous, I guess, as what the Beatles were doing, but just as effective.
But where did he say the idea came from?
Yeah, he said he'd read about Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh. I think he was just saying, okay, England's got the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and I'm here in the States and I've got Willie and the Poor Boys. So, yeah, Down on the Corner is sort of their signature song.
Down on the Corner, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Jeff, you know, we have a regular texter, Rosa, who always signs herself Rosa Down on the Corner. Wonder if it's connected to that song in any way, Rosa.
Guaranteed. And she'll be tuning in when this segment plays. Absolutely. Rosa? Is it Rosa, did you say?
Yes.
I give a big shout out to Rosa. I'm sure she's a Creedence fan. Absolutely.
Hi, Rosa, if you're listening. Mm. Now, how did they get their name anyway? What can you tell us, Jeff?
I can't tell you anything. I can't remember.
Okay. Well, it's don't worry. I've got the internet at my fingertips. So Susan, they decided they had better replace Gollywogs, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a good move. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I don't think Gollywogs is really going to. Can I mind you, the band were also known as the Honkies for a while. Not the band, as in the band, were known as the Honkies, and Creedence were known as the Gollywogs. So band name selection was not necessarily a fine art in the late 60s.
So anyway, Tom Fogarty had a friend called Creedence Newball, who they borrowed the Creedence from.
Really? Then, Creedence was his Christian name?
Yes. Creedence Newball, that is a name, isn't it?
Man, I missed out on that with my kids, didn't I? Yeah. Could have got a little boy Creedence.
Yeah. The Clearwater, it came from a TV commercial for Olympia Beer, which used the slogan, "It's the water." And then Revival was meant to be the kind of renewed commitment to their music.
I thought it might have had a greater inspiration than, you know, somebody, what was his friend's Christian name? Well, I guess it could have been better. It could have been, if his name was Fred, it wouldn't really have cut it, would it?
Exactly.
Fred's Clearwater Revival.
I mean, if you are or were Creedence Newball, I'd love to think that you'd lent your name to, you know, a rock band that was going to live on in history.
Yeah, and look, and if he's listening, you know, I don't know, via, I don't know, streaming somewhere, give us a call. We'd love to know. He could still be around.
I wonder if the name Creedence as a first name is around. Any Creedences listening?
I haven't met a lot of Creedences. Suzanne, you?
No,
any Creedences in the family? No,
not a one.
Okay. Now we're going to start talking about precipitation now.
Maybe Bad Moon Rising was really about the weather, because there's clearly a weather obsession.
Maybe he wanted to be a weatherman. Mm. You never know. It's a kind of cool job. You know, you're just pointing at a board and making predictions. It's a bit like race calling. We're going to play Who'll Stop the Rain. Now, this is from Cosmos Factory, my favourite Creedence record. And looking at the track listing of Cosmos Factory, it's like a greatest hits record. However, I'd really recommend anybody who's listening to this and goes, I want to dig deeper, I want to do a deep dive into Creedence, listen to their 11-minute version of Heard It Through the Grapevine, which is on Cosmos Factory. It's an old Motown song that was probably best known from a version by Marvin Gaye. It's just fantastic. I would recommend headphones on, perhaps reclining in a beanbag while listening to it. This is just a suggestion, but it's fantastic. I don't think an 11-minute song is really going to fit into our segment, Suzanne, so we'll play Who's Stop the Rain instead.
Okay, now, where did this come from?
Again, he's a very literal guy, John Fogarty. Mm. They played at Woodstock. They weren't happy with it, which is why you don't see them in the film. They didn't approve for it to be shown in the finished documentary. And Fogarty's estimation of the whole experience was the crowd were really nice people, very hairy, very colourful. And, you know, what about the festival? Well, he said it started to rain, it got really muddy, and then half a million people took their clothes off. Then I went home and wrote this song. Cuts to the chase, doesn't he?
It certainly does. Who's Stop the Rain. And as we journey through some of the greatest hits of Creedence Clearwater Revival, now we have to see if we've ever seen the rain.
Yeah, I know. He just really had this Love thing about rain. Precipitation. Precipitation Clearwater Revival. No, different word. Yeah, I don't know. It's just good, I guess, metaphorically, if we don't want to get too, you know, profound here, Suzanne. It, you know, it kind of works as an image. Now, this is Who'll Stop the Rain is interesting. Again, another big hit. We're now into 1971. You know, they're coming towards the sort of back end of this purple patch that they had. A lot of people misread another lyric of his that was misread. People thought he was talking about Nixon and political activism.
Have you ever seen the rain?
Have you ever seen the rain? Yeah. Sorry, yes. And in fact, he was singing about the problems that were, you know, festering within the band. John Fogerty said that song is about the impending breakup of Creedence. So it was quite ominous in its own way.
Before they had actually split up?
No. I think a lot of this is said in hindsight.
Right.
Because he spent, there's so much interesting stuff about John Fogerty, but once the band broke up, he spent a long time in the wilderness and just turned his back on the whole music business, particularly on, you know, the history of he and this band. There's a story, and I find it really haunting, is that while he was in this sort of period of exile, he'd grown a heavy beard, he put on weight, he just was having nothing to do with the music business, and he saw a Creedence covers band. And he stood in front of them, watching them for a while, just eyeing them, and they had no idea who he was. There's something really quite eerie about that, isn't
there? That is a scene from a film.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I found that really quite eerie that he was so disenfranchised. But it was mainly about business and I guess personal stuff as well. But, you know, basically he made no money from these amazing hit songs, and it was not till in recent history that a lot of lawsuits have been resolved, and he'd finally seen the proceeds from, you know, multi-million selling records. So it's quite a sad story. You know, his brother died early. There was all this falling out. But there was a bunch of great songs.
Yeah.
And Have You Ever Seen the Rain is one of the best, I think. And yeah, we're in 1971 now. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the rain? Jeff Apter is here. We're doing a This Musical Life. Jeff is a music journalist who's written books on, well, heaps of musos, including Neil Finn and Keith Urban. His most recent book is Lee Gordon Presents, but there's a new one on Australian Crawl coming out in just a few months' time. Okay, we are up to Someday Never Comes now, Jeff, and this is from the Creedence's final album, Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras, absolutely. And it's really, feels like a very mournful swan song, this song. John Fogerty's life by this time, it's late 1972 now. They've really only been in the spotlight for 3 or 4 years, but so much had happened. You know, hit songs, tours, chaos within the band, the realization that they'd signed a very, very, very dodgy record deal when they first started out, you know, not unlike hundreds of, maybe thousands of other young bands. His marriage, even his parents' marriage, had started to come undone at this point. I mean, what else could happen to this poor guy? As he later admitted, he was also starting to sense the darkness of Fantasy Records, which was their record label, and realizing, like I said, they'd signed a very, very dodgy deal. And I think all of it comes out in this song, which was, you know, pretty much the last hurrah from Creedence and from John Fogerty. For I think it was almost a decade before he made another record. So, like I say, he really wanted to turn his back and just saw it. It was almost like he was suffering from some kind of, you know, stressed PTSD from all this stuff that he'd experienced in the band, which is awful, isn't it, when you think about it? When you have so much success, again, it's a recurring theme in some of my work, is that when you're in the middle of it, because it's so chaotic, you don't really get the time to go, we're doing great. Isn't this exciting? It's more like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And it's not really until, in John Fogerty's case, it probably took 25 years before he was actually able to pause and go, wow. We did some great things together. You know, we made some timeless music. So it's a sad story in a lot of ways.
Yeah, here it is. Someday Never Comes.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. Oh, there were many things I didn't. By the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, 'cause someday it never comes. The time and tears went by, and I collected. For there were many things I didn't know. When Daddy went away, he said, try to be a man, and someday you'll understand. Mama held his hand, saying someday you'll understand.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, Someday Never Comes, from their final album, Mardi Gras. You're hearing the story and some of the music of Creedence Clearwater Revival tonight with music journalist Jeff Apter. Well, actually, we're kind of leaving Creedence now, aren't we, Jeff? Because we've got a couple of John Fogerty songs.
Yeah, but it's sort of tied into Creedence too, because it's a period in more recent history when he's finally, you know, he wouldn't play Creedence songs for a long, long, long time, but he finally reclaimed them. And like I said earlier, he got the rights and he managed to be, properly paid for these great hits once again. It took a long, long time. The 70s weren't kind. He made a couple of solo records. He made a solo record in 1976. I think it was called Voodoo. And it was rejected by the record company. And he hated it too and told them just to destroy the tapes. So it got that bad for John in the 70s. But in 1985, he came back with a record that was really a comeback hit. It was called Centerfield. It just had a lot of that kind of Creedence feel to it. I mean, the guy was never going to veer too far from the formula, which he'd probably created himself in the 60s and 70s. This title track, which we're going to play, Centerfield itself, it's played on a loop, apparently. If you walk into, because everybody, all your listeners are going to be going to the Baseball Hall of Fame at Cooperstown, New York, aren't they, Suzanne? I mean, it's a regular, isn't it?
It's on everybody's bucket list.
Apparently, if you walk in, it's going to be playing there on a loop all day long, you know, when he plays this song live. And I was lucky enough to see him in 1997 in New York at a point where he did start playing Creedence songs again for the first time in more than 20 years. And he plays this song on a baseball-shaped guitar. So it's very, very fitting. And you get a sense that he was finally not at ease, but at least a lot more comfortable with his past. And Centerfield was quite a hit record, so it was a really great comeback for John Fogerty.
John Fogerty and Centerfield. So Jeff Abter has been here for the hour playing you some of the hits of Creedence Clearwater Revival. Jeff, we've reached the end of the road.
We have. It's been quite a journey.
What are you going to take us out with?
I'm going to give you a little backstory. A song called The Old Man Down the Road, which was from the same record, 1985, Centerfield. And this is before John has resolved all his copyright issues and problems with his former record company. This is probably the most bizarre story in his storied career, is that when it came out, a guy called Sol Zantz, who owned the record company which Creedence recorded for, who still owned the rights to John's music, sued John because he said it sounds too much like you. So basically he said, this song sounds so much like a song called Run Through the Jungle, which was a Creedence song that he still owned the rights to, that John was effectively plagiarizing himself. I mean, how perverse is that?
What did the courts have to say about that
one? The court said, no, no, he is who he is. You know, it's his sound. So, but it took a long time for him to win. It went through a couple of courts before he was actually told that it was okay to sound like himself, essentially. Mm. But like I say, the happy coda to the story is that several years later, John finally resolved all this and now owns and quite happily plays his own music.
So we're going out with The Old Man Down the Road.
The Old Man Down the Road. Yes, absolutely.
Jeff, thank you for being here on Nightlife tonight.
Suzanne, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
There's Jeff Abter, music journalist. We get him back every so often here on Nightlife to do an installment of what we like to call This Musical Life. And here is John Fogerty, An Old Man Down the Road.
ABC Listen.